This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, back this Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime, beginning with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We'll hear the Tollhurst theft matter from October 27th, 1951. After that, it's Night Chase from Tales of the Texas Rangers. That one also aired in 1951, this time from January 28th. But first, here's Johnny Dollar.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Jim Madison at Tri-State. How are you?
Well, Jim, I'm fine, but what's this I read about you people?
You mean the Tollhurst theft, I suppose?
Yeah. No progress yet?
As a matter of fact, that's why I'm phoning. We tried to get you right after the robbery, but you weren't in.
Well, I was on a case most of last week.
Well, we had a call this morning. It was a woman who said she knew something about the case. Of course, it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
What did she say?
She wanted me to swear that we wouldn't call the police. And then she said she'd give us time to decide and call back about 3.
You want me to talk to her if she calls back?
Yes, I don't know anything about these things.
Are you willing to work without the police?
We stand to lose almost $50,000. We'll cut some corners if you will.
Edmund O'Brien in a transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office Tri-State Insurance Group, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Tollhurst theft matter. I note here the accepted report of the robbery because, as will be seen, both the police and the press missed a number of details. The Tollhurst fur shop was entered at closing time Saturday evening by 3 disguised men who at gunpoint relieved Mr. Tollhurst of almost $50,000. Answering a radio alarm, the police spotted the getaway cars that left Hartford, and later, south of town, after a running gunfight with another squad car, it was abandoned by the 4 men who were seen to split up and who escaped into some wooded terrain. That's where it stood. Expense account item 1, $1.50 cab fare from my apartment to the Tri-State offices where your Mr. Madison was waiting for me a little before 3 p.m. The second call from his alleged informer came at 2 minutes after.
Yes? Yes, put her on. Hello? Well, I'm glad you did. I have someone here that I want you to talk to. No. He's not from the police. He's a representative of the company. Just a second. Here she is, darling.
Okay. Hello?
I don't like this. How do I know you're not from the police?
Well, I guess you can't be sure. All I can do is give you our word. And if you do want to talk to us, you'll have to take it.
The other man didn't say he was going to have somebody else.
He decided he'd rather do it this way. Now, listen for a second. To us, the recovery of the money is more important than having anybody arrested. If we can recover it more easily without going to the police, we're willing to do it. Doesn't that make sense?
Maybe. The police will have to come into it sometime, I know that. But also, I know I'm right. I've got my own reasons for going like this, and I know I'm right. I'll take your word for it.
And we'll keep it. Now, what is it that you know?
I know where one of the men is hiding.
Oh? Which one?
He's in a hotel in Boston. He's not using his real name, and I can't tell you what it is.
You mean you know what it is and can't tell us?
I'm a friend of his. That's why I'm calling. He's got to give himself up and get clear of it. That's what you've got to make him do.
I will if I can. What name is he using, and what's the hotel?
I know I'm right. I know it. But you can't tell him how you found out where he is. You can't say anything about this call.
That's a promise, too. I won't.
The name he's using is Taft. He's in the Standing Hotel.
The Standing. Okay. Anything else?
That's all.
How do I get in touch with you again?
You can't. There's nothing more I can do. Just be careful of him. He's awful desperate. Goodbye.
Huh? She's gone.
What do you make of it?
It's hard to tell. She says one of them is in a hotel in Boston that I have to make him give himself up. And be careful because he's desperate. She could be sincere. If she were just fingering this guy, it seems to me she would have called the police.
Then you think it's worth looking into?
Well, there's only one way to find out. Follow it up, see what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Expense account item 2, 3250, car rental and mileage between Hartford and Boston. On the way, I tried to figure ways and means of making an appointment with a hunted armed thug, if that's what he was going to turn out to be. I found the Standing Hotel on the fringe of the commercial and waterfront section, and a man named Walter Taft was registered there. I staked out his corridor and saw him leave his room at about 7:30 that evening. He came back an hour later. When he put his key into the lock, I was strolling toward him. And when he opened the door, I was behind him. Can you hold it a second?
What do you want?
I want to talk to you.
I don't know. You haven't got time.
I'm interested in a man who's registered here under a phony name, Taft.
That's my name. Is there anything wrong with it?
Well, if it's your real name, then I'm wrong. Have you got anything that says it is?
Well, I don't see how it's any of your business, but sure, go on in.
Thanks.
Who are you and what do you want?
I guess the automatic tells me what I came to find out.
Who are you?
I'm a private detective. The insurance company that stands to lose on the toller's job hired me.
That's a lie. You'd have brought the cops if you were.
I've got a wallet in my hip pocket. There's a license.
Don't reach for it. Just turn around.
Sure. You're really jumpy, aren't you?
Here, catch. You don't expect me to swallow this, do you? You were hired by Alan Less. Right, so you found me. Now, what do you think you're going to do with me?
You having trouble with your friend?
I said, what do you think you're going to do with me?
It's going to help if you can convince yourself I'm telling the truth. We want to recover the money, and if you'll help us to do it, we'll try to see that you get a break.
Well, that's a laugh. How would an insurance company find out where I was?
Sometimes they get a tip when the police don't. They can pay for information. The police can't.
Now, where would they get a tip from?
Somebody here in the hotel that figured something was wrong with you. There are fair descriptions out on you and your buddies for size and color and clothes. Somebody could have spotted you.
I can't buy it.
It happened, and the tip was right. You might do yourself a lot of good going to the police by yourself.
Either you're off your nut or you think I am. Come on, start backing up.
What for?
Because I'm leaving. Go on, get started.
If you were thinking straight, you'd talk it over. You're mixed up in a double cross, so you can't believe anything.
That's far enough. Who told you about a double cross?
You did. You said you thought I was hired by Alan Less. They were in the job with you, weren't they?
All right, turn around. Open the closet door. Turn around.
By the time I was on my feet again, he'd had at least 20 minutes start. After I cleaned up some in the crummy bathroom and stopped the bleeding, I looked the place over. There was nothing in it. He'd obviously checked in without anything but the clothes he'd been wearing and the automatic. That was all at the Standing Hotel. I drove back to Hartford and phoned Mr. Madison at home.
I'm sorry, Johnny. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm not complaining, just telling you what happened. I guess I asked for it, bullying in like that, but I couldn't think of another way to get to him alone and get to the point in a hurry.
Call the police?
I didn't for two reasons. They'd just be sore at us for not reporting the girl's call to them earlier, and I hated to cross her at this point in case she might come back to us with some more information.
Well, I guess we aren't any worse off than we were before she called, are we?
No, we made a little progress. We know there's trouble between the men. We're fairly sure they're all still in this part of the country, and we have a couple of first names. And if you want me to stay on the case, there's another angle I'd like to look into.
What's that, Johnny?
From the beginning, it's bothered me that a furrier would have that much money in his store, no matter how fancy.
Well, he said he hadn't banked for 4 days.
It's still too much money. I suppose the police have covered it, but a thing like that could develop into a lead.
All right, let's try it.
Good. I'll go see Tolhurst in the morning. Maybe I can handle him without getting myself slugged.
Of course. I'm at your service.
Thanks, Mr. Tolhurst. I know you've answered a lot of questions already.
Yes, I have.
So I won't drag you through the details of the actual theft again.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
Now, the amount of money you lost, almost $50,000.
That question again, why did I have that much in my shop? I have answered that question every possible way without smearing my own good name. The police have driven me mad.
I'd like to have the answers, too.
Very well.
Don't most of your customers purchase with checks, Mr. Tolhurst, or on credit?
No, they do not.
I'd think that they would.
Because you don't understand. The fur business, even more than the jewelry business, is concerned with making beautiful women more beautiful. Don't you agree?
Sure, I do.
Well, hope this doesn't come as a shock to you that there are many, many more wealthy husbands than there are beautiful wives, as opposed to women, that is. So, who would you expect these wealthy husbands to buy the furs for?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Cash purchases, too, huh?
Precisely. If wifey doesn't get the coat, she better not run across a check paying for one. The fur would fly, you might say.
But almost 50,000 in 1 week, that's a lot of intrigue.
One sable was worth 35. And if the name of the purchaser became known, it could literally endanger the national security. I really mean that. It would be discussed from the floor of the Senate. What can I do?
There's no record at all of these sales?
Barely enough to keep my books legal. I've rather specialized in this cash and carry trade. If I was strapped to the rack, I couldn't name these men. I'm helpless.
I think the insurance company might be able to fight your claim because of the stand you're taking. Had you thought of that?
Oh. No, I hadn't. Well, it makes no difference. I'm completely helpless. Unless a member of the board or somebody is an old customer of mine. And that is possible, you know.
I tried a few more approaches on Tolhurst without getting any place. I didn't fully believe him, but I did have to admit that business dealings like that were possible. I left the shop a little after 11 and went to my apartment to call in a report on this phase of the deadlock. My phone was ringing when I got there. Hello? Hello?
Can't help me.
What? I can't hear you. Who is it?
Yesterday.
You're the woman I talked to yesterday?
Yes. You didn't help.
Well, what's the matter with you? What happened?
They were here.
Where are you? Where are you?
Stoddard.
Stoddard Street?
Yes.
What number?
5860.
5860. An apartment number?
Number 12.
All right, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Dollar, I'm coming in.
They went after Fred. You gotta go help him.
Now, wait a minute. Who are you talking about? The men called Alan List?
I don't know them. First, they said I had the money and they beat me. One of them held my mouth so I couldn't scream and the other one hit me.
Do you know where the money is?
No, they wouldn't believe me. Then they made me tell them where Fred is.
Fred is the man I saw last night at the Standing Hotel?
Yes. I can't keep quiet for him anymore. His name is Fred Terrell.
And he's holding out the money.
That's what they said. They said they'd kill him if they had to.
They looked for him at the Standing. They won't find him. He left there last night.
I know. He called. I tried to lie that he was still there, but they phoned him and found out he wasn't. Then they started in again until I told them. He moved to an auto court, and that's where they're going.
Where is it?
I'm not sure. Between here and Boston. But I think it's in this state. It's called the Oak Springs Motel. I tried to warn him. But whoever answered hung up because they couldn't hear what I was saying. I couldn't talk.
What's your name?
Virginia Colley.
Well, how do you fit into this? How much do you know about the robbery?
Nothing. I didn't know about it until afterwards. Red's car was here. He came to get it and said everything had gone wrong and he was in bad trouble.
Yeah, now we all are. You should have told the police and I should have. Promise to know. I'm going to call them now and hope I can fight my way clear of this mess. Where's the telephone?
We will return you to yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Americans now have a double job to do. We must produce enough goods to supply our armed forces, and we must also see that civilian needs are met so that we can prevent further inflation. Better production means greater strength and greater insurance that our free American way will continue. Do your part. Now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we bring you the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
In an attempt to help what was left of my position with the police, the first thing I told them about was the possibility of nailing the 300 men together. But that backfired, too. It took me 20 minutes to learn that the Oak Springs Motel was about 12 miles south of town, and it took me another 15 minutes to get there. Two squad cars were in the driveway, and that looked all right. But when I got to the cottage where Lieutenant Crockett and the other officers were, things looked all wrong. The bodies of two men lay on the floor. Neither one was Fred Sorrell.
Who are you?
My name is Dollar, Lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
Sorrell did this?
Seems to be some confusion about the name. The cottage was rented by an A.J. White.
Sorrell was hiding out under a couple of aliases.
Too bad we didn't have that information.
I didn't know who he was until a half hour ago when I called you.
They were already dead a half hour ago. Is there some reason you couldn't have found out 20 minutes before that?
Yeah, I didn't happen to be any place this Collie woman could get a hold of me.
She's the one you just got around to turning in?
That's right. First time I'd even seen her. First time I knew where she lived. First time I knew anything about her. I've done the same thing before, and it's worked out. This time it didn't.
What do you mean?
An anonymous call. She said she had information about the Tollhurst robbery that she couldn't give to you. She gave it to me in confidence, and I played it that way.
You're still playing it that way?
No. I'll give you everything I've got, which still isn't much.
Let's go back to town, where we can get a real statement. Henderson, take over here, will you? I'm going back to the office.
I didn't score very heavily with the lieutenant. He listened to my story point by point, but as he mentioned, actually the only useful thing I gave him was a slightly better description of Sorrell than he'd gotten from the manager of the auto court.
I don't know what to think about it, Dollar. I know you guys figure you can operate that way, and maybe it works sometimes. Sure, people will talk to you when they won't talk to us, but you're always taking a chance that it'll get out of hand like this did.
This one was out of hand from the beginning.
And it's turned into murder now.
You aren't blaming me for that, are you?
No, but I want you to leave the case alone from here on. Stay away from the Cowley woman. Stay away from everything.
Does that mean I can go now?
Yeah. Might be a good idea if you went home and brushed up on a little police work.
You're really digging it in, aren't you, Lieutenant?
You got it coming. Go on now. I got to get back on this thing.
I knew my license was probably at stake, but Crockett's attitude, right or wrong, was more than I could take. Virginia Cowley had been put in the police hospital, suffering from internal injuries caused by the beating. I went back to her address, lied my way past the landlady and into the apartment. From a notebook on the telephone stand, I learned that Sorrell lived in Princeton. That was my next stop.
Fred Sorrell? Yeah, he still lives here. I haven't seen him some time now. Seems to me he's out of town.
I came all the way up from New York just to see him. You suppose I could get into his place, leave a note or something?
Well, why don't you just go up and see if the other fellow's there? Name a hacker.
Oh, a roommate?
Yeah, you could leave a note with him.
Oh, good. How do I get there?
Second floor rear, numbers 210.
Friend of Sorrell's, I've got to see you.
Yeah, he's sleeping in his joint. What's the matter with that jerk, anyway?
Fred? When did you hear from him last?
A couple of days ago. In some kind of trouble?
He sure is.
On the bar some money from me, the lazy jerk. Told him to go take a jump or get a job. One or both.
He wanted to borrow money?
Yeah. Want me to mail him $50. What's the matter with him, anyway, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he's done it up pretty good. Have you heard about the Tollhurst robbery?
What are you handing me?
You know a couple of his friends called Al and Les somebody?
Hey, who are you, anyway?
Here.
Detective. You ain't telling me Fred's mixed up in nothing as big as the Tollhurst thing. He ain't got the brains.
He hasn't if he has to write you for $50 after he pulled it. What about Al and Les?
Yeah. Les Burnick and Al Hutchins. I met him, but that's all. I'm out of town. They're in it too, huh? Hey, you ain't pulling my leg, are you?
No. Did he write you from Boston by any chance? The Standing Hotel? Using the name Walter Taft?
That's right. Knew those guys were no good, and I told him so. He was always talking big money. I never thought he had the guts for anything like that.
Don't congratulate him. He built it up to murder today.
Oh,
quit it.
It must have been Al and Les. You'll read about it, but for now, take my word for it. There was a double cross, or they figured there was. They were both shot, and Sorrell is still on the loose.
This is straight. He wouldn't come here, would he?
I don't know what he'd do. He must be half crazy by now. Can you think of any place else he might go?
He's got a girl he mooches off all the time.
Yeah, I know about her. He wouldn't go there, not now. He wanted a place to hide out. He was driving his car so he could travel for some distance, but not far. If he's thinking at all, he'll know he has to get rid of it.
No. I'm not holding nothing back. A guy does anything like this, he doesn't deserve help from anybody.
By this time, he probably thinks he does.
You don't think he'd pull his old lady into the mess, do you?
You might. Where is she?
She's got a farm. I never saw it, but he talked about it once in a while. Little place she runs with an old guy helping her. It ain't far from here.
Do you know where it is?
Somewhere west. Hey, that's her picture. I think the name of the town is on it. Down here in the corner. I just remembered. I noticed it.
Tarrington. Sure, I know where that is. About 25 miles. I'd like to look at some of the rest of his stuff, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. This is as bad as you say it is. You can do anything you want. If you don't mind, I'm going to move out until this is cleared up. I don't want that crazy jerk to be coming back here while I'm around.
Nothing in Sorrell's things gave a hint as to where he'd be likely to go, but to stay on the move more than for any other reason, I decided to cover the farm. And to stay on the safe side, I stopped by my apartment to pick up a pocket gun.
Here?
Well, it's a sort of a social call. Mrs. Sorrell here?
Nope. She went to town. Why she went with her?
I was passing through. I know her son. I thought I'd stop by.
Oh, you're a policeman, then.
What makes you say that?
We heard about Frederick. At least some of us did. We kept it from Mrs. Sorrell. That's why we sent him to town. We don't want that poor soul to learn about him until it's all finished. Did you think he'd come here?
How much do you know about it?
Somebody heard on the radio about the murders. You think he'd be hidden here?
Not exactly, but every possibility has to be covered.
He'd never come here. He wouldn't be turned out by his mother, but the rest of us would make short work of him. You're welcome to search the place if you choose to.
Has he been in touch with Mrs. Sorrell through this thing?
Nobody's been in touch with Mrs. Sorrell. She don't read her own mail or papers either, because she's blind. She don't listen to the radio or talk on the telephone because she's nearly deaf. Frederick is a rotten apple that hasn't been allowed back here for 3 years.
And she doesn't know about him?
Not for almost that whole time. Oh, yeah, she thinks he's a big success in the hardware business. And we've talked about it already. We think he's going to start a business in Australia. And his mother will think he's there until she dies. And you ain't going to tell her any different.
I don't see why I should.
Well, yeah. Want to search the place?
No, I don't want to, but as long as I'm here. Sorrell wasn't there, and by the time I left, I was made to feel like a criminal myself for looking the place over. By the time I got back to Hartford, the extras were out saying, "Widespread search fails to uncover killer." And something that had been bothering me came to mind again. Why, with a $50,000 haul, hadn't Sorrell gotten out of New England? A few more questions fell into line, too. How could an amateur like Sorrell escape a full-fledged police search? And why would he even think of a double cross on his first job? And finally, why, after running out of Boston, would he have come back to an auto court 12 miles south of Hartford? I covered the final point and learned that the Oak Springs Motel was within a few miles of the point where he and the other two men had abandoned their car and taken off on foot.
I thought I told you to stay away from this case.
You can't take away my right to make a living, Lieutenant. I found his car. Isn't that worth anything?
How do I know what it's worth?
It's something you haven't done with all your roadblocks. I'm 5 minutes away from his car, and I think he'll come back to it as soon as it starts to get dark. Can't you take a chance on it and have a few men out there?
All my men are busy. I'll see what I can do.
It's less than an hour till dark. I hope you make it. I'd come back to the auto court and then found the approximate spot where Sorrell and his friends had left their car. I'd found a pair of ruts winding through the trees, and where they'd stopped, I'd found his car. When I got back to it after talking with Lieutenant Crockett, I put my car under as much cover as I could find and waited. I was still there alone when the sun started to set. And then I heard him before I saw him.
You. What are you doing here?
Don't try with a gun, Sorrell. I've got one, too, this time.
What are you doing here?
I've been almost every place else. Doesn't make any difference to you that I'm here. There's no place for you to go anyway. You've been safe here in the trees. But you couldn't get any place else.
I could make it if I wanted to.
No, you couldn't. You missed when you didn't make it before everybody knew who you were. Right after you pulled the job, yes, but not now. You must have realized that.
I can make it.
Not now. Why didn't you go any farther than Boston? Why did you come back to Hartford?
I had my reasons.
You still got them?
What do you mean?
You killed Les Vernick and Al Hudson and then came right back here to the trees. I don't think you double-crossed them. I don't think you even got the money beyond this grove.
You know where it is?
No, I don't, Sorrell. That's only what I think. And you had to kill them because all they could figure was that you double-crossed them.
You want to help me? You want to? It's here, all of it.
It's too late to help. You killed them.
But it's all here. $50,000. I came down the road and then I turned that way. That's when they were shooting at us. I was carrying the money, but I was excited. Alan Les went that way and I came this way. I'm sure it was here. Yeah, I remember that big tree. I went past it. I'm sure.
You could find $200,000 and it wouldn't do you any good.
Yes, it would. You could buy anything with money, and it's all here. I know it was here because I ran on this road, and then this is where the road ends. And I went past that tree, and I just remember how far I went. Because I put it down, and I covered it over with some leaves. If I just saw them, I'm sure I'd remember.
Sorrell.
I know where it is. Hey, what are you?
I want your gun, Sorrell.
Get away from me! Get away!
Quit it!
No! It's all here! It's all here, and I'm going to get it. Now, get away from me. Get away, you.
All right.
Get away.
All right. Expense account item 3, extra mileage, etc., $43.60. Expense account total, $77.60. Remarks. A police searching party finally found the satchel of missing money, so the company is not out. Lieutenant Crockett and I finally got together, so I'm not out. The girl is nothing. So it leaves Sorrell, who really lost his mind over money, and the furrier Tolhurst, who didn't lose anything, not even that universal customer, the wealthy American husband. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music by Wilbur Hatch. Edmund O'Brien can soon be seen starring in the Paramount Pictures Technicolor production, Silver City. Featured in tonight's cast were Parley Bear, Virginia Gregg, Stacey Harris, Bob Sweeney, Herb Butterfield, Clayton Post, and Howard McNear. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle.
Of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Another authentic reenactment of a case transcribed from the files of the Texas Rangers. Dates and places in the following story are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record.
Later this evening, great entertainment continues on the NBC Radio Network with such stellar programs as The Big Show, The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, Theater Guild on the Air, and The $64 Question. Immediately following Tales of the Texas Rangers, you'll hear The Big Show with Tallulah Bankhead and all of her guest stars. Today, listen for Vera Lynn, Jack Carson, James Barton, Tony Bavar, and Bob and Ray, along with Meredith Wilson and the Big Show Chorus and Orchestra. The Big Show brings 90 minutes of enjoyable listening, and then Phil Harris and Alice Faye step before the NBC microphones to bring you mirth and music in their own inimitable manner. Later, it's Theater Guild on the Air with Dorothy McGuire, David Niven, and Roddy McDowell in the Theater Guild presentation of The Thief. And then, too, you'll be happily entertained by Jack Parr as he asks the $64 question. So keep tuned here for continuous great entertainment. And now back to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
And now, from the files of the Texas Rangers, the case called Night Chase.
It is 9:20 on the evening of May 5th, 1937. 16 miles north of Durham, Texas, rancher Jim Fuller and his wife Susan are driving up the dirt road which leads to their ranch house.
Sure is a long haul into town and back, but I reckon the movie was worth it.
It was a good movie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The girl was so pretty, too.
We got prettier ones right here in Texas.
Oh, what's an old fella like you know about pretty girls?
Huh? Well, I did pick you out, didn't I?
Why, Jim.
Susan, if it wasn't so blame dark in this car, I'd say you was blushing.
Well, maybe I am, but one thing, I ain't going to sit here all night letting you tease me. Let's get on into the house.
You go in ahead, honey. I'm going to take a walk down to the barn. Want to take a look at that mare's leg.
Well, don't be long, Jim. I'll have some hot cocoa fixed time to get back.
Susan, come here, quick.
What? What's wrong?
Down there, toward the east range.
Why, it looks like some men's flashlights. What did they do?
Wait a minute. Yep, they got a truck with them. Must have broke down a fence and backed it in.
Jim, ain't that where you got the heifers and cows?
It sure is. I'll bet anything them fellas are fixing to rustle my calves.
Jim, where are you going?
I'm going to get my shotgun and go down there after them.
Jim, wait! If those men are rustlers, they've probably got guns, too. Now, why don't you phone the sheriff and let him handle it?
Well...
Please, Jim.
All right, come on. Should have had them calves branded afore now. Rustlers get them, I'll never be able to identify them.
Well, maybe they won't get away.
You stay out here in the porch, honey. Keep an eye on them while I call the sheriff. They start to take off, now you sing out.
All right, Jim.
Operator, you get me the sheriff, quick. They still out there, Susan?
I only see one flashlight now. I think...
Hello, Sheriff. This is Jim Fuller. I got a rustlers on my place. Yeah, down at the beginning of my east range.
Jim!
Just a minute, Sheriff. What is it, honey?
They just started off.
They're taking off now, Sheriff. Could you see which way they headed, Susan?
Looks like they might be making for that road runs along the other end of the range.
They're moving toward Farm Road 48, Sheriff. Yeah, I know you will. I sure hope you get them.
The sheriff alerted his deputies for pursuit of the rustlers and requested assistance from the Texas Rangers. Rangers Jace Pearson and Clay Morgan, returning from a case, were contacted by radio and informed that the sheriff had blockaded the south end of Farm Road 48. They were to set up a checkpoint on Farm Road 48, 15 miles to the north.
Stop signs and flares are all set, Jace.
Good, Clay. Pretty good spot for a roadblock, curve on one end, that hill on the other. Yeah, sounds like our first customer coming now.
Passenger car. Couldn't be our boys. Wave them through, will you, Clay?
It's all right. Go ahead.
You don't figure they could have cut off on another side road, do you, Jace?
The sheriff said there was no turnoff between here and the ranch.
Clay.
Yeah. Truck, all right. Coming pretty fast.
Yeah, just flipped off their lights. Must be them.
They don't stop. Try and get the tires. They're not going to stop. Give it to them. Come on, let's get after them.
Yeah.
Could have sworn we hit a back tire.
Might have, but they got two wheels on the rear.
It's going to be tough working up any speed with the horse trailer on the back.
Give her all she's got. I'll get on the radio. Unit 10 to KTXA.
KTXA to Unit 10. Go ahead, Unit 10.
Subjects failed to halt at roadblock. They're proceeding north on Farm Road 48. Unit 10 pursuing.
We'll notify all units.
10-4, Unit 10 clear.
KTXA, Austin.
I think we're gaining some, Jace.
Sounds like they think so, too. Now, let me get that rifle.
Jace, you all right?
Yeah, I guess so. Two scratches from the glass. Sure made a mess of the windshield with that one.
Hope their aim doesn't get any better.
I'll see if I can spoil it.
Hey, you did it. You got that other back tire. Come on over. Hold it, Clay. There they go, climbing out of the cab. Watch yourself.
Yeah, just splitting up, Jace.
Take the one across the road. I'll get the driver.
Yeah.
Hey,
you get him, Jace?
This one's dead. How'd you make out?
Come on over. I think I lost him, Jace.
He went down to that scrub.
Yeah, he could have headed anywhere from there.
He can't be too far away.
You keep after him. I'll go back and unload the horses. Catch up with you in a few minutes. Boo, Chucky. Boo, Dan. Boo, boy. Boo. Clay?
Yeah, Jace. Over here.
Here's your horse.
Thanks.
How are you making out?
Oh, some tracks. Not very clear. Ground's too rocky.
From what I could follow with my flash coming down here, he headed along the bottom of this gully. I lost the trail just before I got to you.
Yeah, this rocky ground makes night trailing rough.
Uh-huh. Wait a minute. Ooh. Ooh.
What is it, Jace?
Over there. A shack.
Yeah. No lights. Could be worth taking a look.
Let's go.
Yeah, boy. Come on, Chucky. If he's not around there, chances are we won't get him tonight.
No, but maybe whoever lives in the shack heard him go by. Might get a line on his direction.
What if we don't?
Then we'll go back and see what we can find out about the dead man. Truck ought to tell us something, too.
Hey, did you hear the way those calves were bawling?
Yeah. Some of them got hurt when the truck turned over. Poor devils. Ooh, ooh, Chucky.
Ooh, Dan, ooh, boy.
Ooh.
Not a sound. Think it could be inside, Jace?
It could be. You stay here and cover me while I go up to the door.
Sure.
Si, senor.
Texas Rangers. Are you here alone?
Si. Si, I'm alone. You forgive I'm not dressed, but I was asleep.
We'd like to come in for a few minutes, if you don't mind.
Oh, si, si, senor. Por favor, come in, please.
It's all right, Clay. Come on.
Right.
I just make the light in the lantern. Hey, un momento, senor.
Yes. That's better, no?
Yeah. You been here all evening?
Oh, si, si, senor. I'm here. This is my house. Tonight I'm tired and I go to sleep early.
We're looking for a man. We think he might have come this way.
A man? What does he look like, Sam?
Yeah, we don't know yet. But he stole some cattle from a ranch down a piece.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Did you see anybody pass here tonight?
Oh, no, senor, no, nobody.
Yeah, any noises outside?
Noises? No, nobody but you.
All right. Come on, Clay.
You gonna go now, senor?
Yeah, we'll be back in the morning to pick up our man's trail. You better keep your door locked tonight.
Si, si, senor. Adios, senor.
Adios.
You can come out now. They're gone, senor.
You did real good, Pepe. I'm proud of you.
Oh, si, si, I do just what you tell me, senor, because I'm so scared.
You had a right to be. You'd have said one word, I'd have blown your head off.
Oh, no. You heard me. I told them nothing.
Uh-huh. You told them nothing.
Si, si, now you go, senor. Please, they come back tomorrow.
Yeah. And you're going to forget you ever saw me.
Oh, si, senor. I don't tell them. I forget everything.
Sure, Pepe. You said it just right. You're going to forget everything.
Oh, oh boy.
Whoa, whoa.
Howdy, Rangers.
Evening.
My name's Jim Fuller. Sheriff asked me to tell you, he went to fetch J.P.
You the man whose cattle were stolen?
Yeah, I got most of them rounded up again, though, except for one ahead shoot, because he was hurt too bad.
You didn't touch anything on the truck, did you?
No, highway patrol wouldn't let nobody touch nothing.
Want to start with the dead man, Jase? Yeah, might as well check the truck first as long as we're up here. We'll see you later, Mr. Fuller.
Yeah, sure, Ranger.
Notice anything funny about the truck, Clay?
Yeah, no license plate.
Want to check the chassis number? I'll try the motor.
Sure. Couple of shells from an automatic on the ground.
That'll be some help. How about the chassis number? The
seal plate's been taken off.
I figured it would be. Come here and take a look.
What'd you find?
Oh, motor number chiseled off. Sure went to a lot of trouble. Get a lab crew up here. Have them work it over.
You think they'll be able to bring out the number with acid?
Either that or by heating it hot enough so the number shows. Sometimes that works better.
Well, we better go see if the dead man has any kind of identification.
Yeah. But I got a hunch he won't.
Yeah, they must have planned this pretty careful.
And for a long time, motor number wasn't taken off yesterday. Body's over at the left, Clay.
Yeah, there's one rustler who won't try a second job.
I'd like to make sure his partner won't either.
Yeah. Here's his gun. Old one. 38 Colt revolver.
Yeah, that means the other man had the automatic. Check his pockets, Clay. I'll hold the light.
All right.
Yeah. A little bit of change. Cigarette.
Yeah, looks like your hunch was right, Jase.
Nothing, huh?
Uh-uh. Well, what's our next step?
We'll radio for the lab crew, and then as soon as it's light, we'll head back to that gully and start tracking again. At dawn, we retraced our steps of the night before. Even in daylight, the rocky terrain made it difficult to pick up a trail. We split up and began crisscrossing the area. 40 minutes later, Clay called me.
Hey, Jase!
What'd you find, Clay?
Whoa, Charlie.
These tracks, Jase. Pretty clear ones.
Uh-huh. Line them up. Look like they lead from any place special?
Yeah, the Mexican shack.
Let's ride over there. Have another talk with him.
Get up, Charlie. Come on. You figure our rustler could have been there sometime last night?
There's a well by the front door. He might have been pretty thirsty from running. Could be. Stopped for a drink.
Might be some fingerprints handy if he did.
That's what I'm hoping.
Doesn't look like the Mexican's awake yet. Maybe he's still inside, scared to come out.
Who, Charkey?
Oh, boy, ooh.
Clay, through that window.
Yeah. Funny he'd have a lantern burning in broad daylight.
And even funnier, he let it smoke that way. Come on.
He might be out somewhere.
But he wouldn't leave that lantern burning. Come on, let's go in.
Jase, in the corner.
Yeah. Our Mexican friend. Shot to death.
In just a moment, we will continue with Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Jase Pearson.
Most of us know that the regular purchase of United States defense bonds is the safest and surest way to save. But as we begin this new year, it's a good time to check up and ask, are you buying as many defense bonds as you should regularly? Set up a plan for buying bonds right through the year. That's the practical way to make sure that you actually do buy bonds instead of just thinking about it. One way is to join the payroll savings plan where you work. Ask your employer to set aside a certain sum from each paycheck and invest it in defense bonds for you. If you're not on a payroll, join the bond-a-month plan at your bank. Ask your bank to charge a certain amount against your checking account each month. They'll use that amount to purchase bonds, which will be sent to you regularly. No matter what plan you use, be sure to buy defense bonds systematically. That's the sure, sensible way to save, and it benefits both you and your country. And now back to the Texas Rangers.
We continue now with Tales of the Texas Rangers and our authentic story, Night Chase.
An automatic shell on the floor of the shack indicated that the rustler we were after had shot the Mexican. We followed the killer's tracks to the main highway 4 miles north where they ended. Then we went back to town. A lab crew was able to bring out the motor number on the truck by heat process. By mid-morning, we traced ownership of the truck to Harry Crowley, a tenant rancher whose place was near Fillmore, 30 miles east of the crime. Shortly before noon, we were approaching the Crowley ranch.
Jase?
Uh-huh.
You're still thinking about the Mexican, aren't you?
Uh-huh.
Well, it was something that couldn't be helped.
Maybe not.
You really think our man was hiding in the closet the whole time we were there?
He must have been. There's no other reason why he'd shoot him. A man running away doesn't stop off in a lonely shack to commit murder just to pass the time.
Yeah, well, you could be right. But if he was there, that'd make the dead man an awful good actor.
He probably thought it was the only way to save his life.
Too bad he was so convincing. Here's the Crowley Ranch, Jase.
Yeah. Sure hope we find something here. This is one killer I want to settle with personally, and soon.
Well, we can be pretty sure this Crowley was one of the two rustlers.
We'll have to find out if he's the killer or the one I got. Here comes somebody. Watch it.
Yeah?
Mrs. Crowley?
Yeah?
We're Texas Rangers. We'd like to talk to you. Can we come in?
All right.
Give me that photoplay. Thanks. Did you ever see this man before?
Well, that's my husband. What happened to him?
I'm afraid I got bad news for you, ma'am. Your husband was caught rustling cattle last night. He was killed.
Killed?
I'm sorry, ma'am.
I knew it was gonna happen. I knew it all along.
Maybe you better sit down, ma'am.
I don't want to sit down. Kept telling Harry, you got a ranch and a wife, you got to take care of us both. Not him. He had to keep thinking up big ideas to make easy money. Well, now he's got just what I told him he'd get.
How long was your husband mixed up in cattle rustling?
How would I know? He never told me nothing. Always away from the ranch, leaving all the work for me.
We're looking for another man who was with him last night. You know of any people he went around with?
No.
Didn't he ever bring friends out here to the ranch?
Him? He was hardly ever here himself. When he was, he just spent his time jawing about all the big things he was going to do. He was going to be rich, Harry was. Him, rich.
All right, ma'am. We'll be going now. But we'd appreciate it if you'd stay here. We'll send somebody around to pick you up this afternoon.
Pick me up? What for?
You'll have to go over to Durham and identify your husband's body. By the way, ma'am, you have a phone here?
Phone? We can't afford no phone.
Thanks, ma'am.
There's something fishy about this, Jase. She didn't seem at all surprised when we said her husband was dead.
I know. Did you notice her eyes? Red and swollen, like she'd been crying for hours.
Think she already knew about her husband being dead?
Could be. Some one man who could have told her. Our killer.
Well, suppose she does know something she didn't tell us. How do we find out?
She has some connection with Crowley's partner. She'll want to tell him we're on his trail.
Well, there's no phone in the house. You'd have to use that jalopy over there to get to him.
Pull over that hill, Clay. Or we can watch the house without being seen. If she goes somewhere, we're going to be right behind her. Our hunch paid off. 20 minutes later, Mrs. Crowley left the house and drove to town. We followed. She stopped at the hardware store and went in. When she came out again, a man walked with her to the car, talking urgently. Then he went back into the store. We let Mrs. Crowley drive a little way down the street before we told her to pull over to the curb.
What you want now?
Got your engine, ma'am. I thought we told you to stay home.
I wanted to come in and tell my brother about Harry.
That's your brother you were talking to outside the hardware store?
Yeah.
We'll go have a talk with him. You stay right here, ma'am, and this time do what we say.
We might be onto something, Chief.
Yeah, maybe. We only got suspicions to go on so far. We gotta have more than that.
Be with you in a second, Ranger, as soon as I get this can of paint out. Yeah.
Now, what can I do for you?
I'm Ranger Pearson. This is Ranger Morgan.
Well, I'm glad to know you, Rangers. My name's Holden, Hal Holden.
Your sister told us she broke the news to you about her husband.
How did you...
You started to say something, Mr. Holden.
No, I was just surprised. Ruth only left here a couple of minutes ago. Awful thing about Harry. Terrible.
You know anybody Harry was running around with? Somebody who could have been his partner on this job?
Partner? No.
Well, can you give us the names of any of his friends?
Well, I'd like to help, Ranger, but... I don't reckon I know of anybody Harry ran with.
I see. You mind telling us where you were last night, Mr. Holden?
Me? Why, I... Look, Ranger, you think I was mixed up in this?
That's just a routine question. Where were you?
Out to the ranch whole evening.
Any special reason you were there the whole evening?
Well, sure, I lived there. Did my sister tell you that?
Mr. Holden, do you have a gun?
No, I never have owned one.
Lots of pretty guns in that rack over there. Seems like the man who sells guns would have one for himself.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Tell you the truth, I've always been a little scared of guns.
Thanks, Mr. Holden. We might drop back a little later on.
Anytime at all, Rangers. Anytime.
How about it, Clay? You look like the one you chased into the gully last night?
I'd like to say it was for sure. It's the same build, but you know how dark it was.
Yeah.
If
He's our man, Jace. He's going to be tough to crack.
I know. With his sister to bear him out, he's got a pretty good alibi.
The thing we have to do is find the gun he used.
Even if we do, we still have to tie Holden to it.
You reckon we better have a look through the Crowley ranch house?
Might turn up something. We'll have Mrs. Crowley take us through.
Can I go now?
Yeah, I'm sorry to keep you waiting, ma'am. Better start back to the ranch now.
I still got some things to do in town.
Well, they'll have to wait. We want to search your home. Be better if you're there.
You can't do that.
We could get a warrant. It'd save time if you gave us permission.
All right, you've got permission.
Thanks, ma'am. You drive ahead. And remember, we'll be right behind you.
Wasting your time, Rangers. You ain't gonna find a thing in my brother's room.
Maybe we'll agree with you, ma'am, after we're through looking.
Jase! I found this in the wastebasket next to the desk.
Uh-huh. Empty cartridge box.
Yeah, same caliber as the ones we found last night.
Mrs. Crowley, have you any idea how this got in your brother's room?
It must have belonged to my husband.
Well, your husband had a revolver, 38 caliber Colt. Shells in this box were made for a 32 automatic. Whose were they, ma'am?
Well, I don't know.
Your brother said he spent last night here. Did he?
He was here the whole night.
I kind of thought you might remember he wasn't here. It could save you a prison term.
Prison? What are you talking about?
If your brother is the man we want, and you're helping him, you could go to jail for obstructing justice.
I got nothing to say. My brother was here at the ranch all last night.
Come on, Miss Crowley.
Why are you taking me?
Down to the constable's office.
You can't arrest me.
We're not arresting you, ma'am. We'll have to have another talk with your brother, and while we do, we just want to be sure where you are.
Howdy, Rangers. Didn't expect to see you back so soon.
Well, we didn't expect to be back so soon.
Picked up any leads in that partner Harry's you were looking for?
I think so.
Oh? You know who he is?
We got a pretty good idea.
Well, I'm right glad to hear it. People like that, they all be put away as soon as you can lay a hand on them.
That's just the way we feel about it, Mr. Holden.
Is there anything I can do for you, Rangers?
We'd like to take a look at the guns you've got in that rack over there.
Guns? Why, sure. Come on over. Are you interested in buying one?
Just looking. Could I see that one?
This rifle here?
The 32 automatic above it.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Of course, I don't know too much about guns. But people who do know tell me this one's a honey. Here you are, Ranger.
Cleaned and oiled recently, hasn't it?
We just got it from the factory a few days ago. That's the way they send them to us.
That's so. This one here, it's a different caliber. The same factory, isn't it, Mr. Holden?
Yeah, sure. What are you getting at, Ranger?
Well, this other gun's hardly oiled at all, just enough to protect it from rust. Are you sure you haven't been using the 32?
I told you, I don't know nothing about guns.
Clay, there's a little workroom in the back of this place. I saw it when we were here before. How about checking it for cotton waste that might have been used to clean a gun?
Sure, Jason.
Look, Ranger, I got a right to know what this is all about.
Sure you have. Take a look at this box. Take a good look. It used to have 32 caliber cartridges in it. We found it in your room.
Who let you in there?
Your sister. Mr. Holden, we think you were with your brother-in-law, Harry Crowley, last night. You tried to steal calves from the Fuller Ranch.
Don't be crazy. I had nothing to do with Harry.
You got away from us and you killed a Mexican because you knew he might identify you, didn't you?
How do you figure to prove what you're saying?
It won't be too hard. Not if Ranger Morgan finds the right piece of cotton waste in the other room.
Cotton waste don't mean nothing.
It does if a ballistic check shows that this was the gun that killed a Mexican last night.
Well,
I found that cotton waste full of burnt powder.
Wrap it up in paper and
bring it. You're not going to get me.
Put down that rifle.
I'll kill you.
Not today.
Get dirty. I got him, Clay.
Yeah, you sure put him to sleep, Jase. But good.
He probably needed it. I don't guess he slept much last night.
In just a moment, we will tell you the results of the case you have just heard.
Immediately following Tales of the Texas Ranger, stay tuned for The Big Show and its galaxy of stars. Today's Big Show guest list includes Jack Carson, Bob and Ray, James Barton, Vera Lynn, and Tony Bavar. And, of course, The Big Show is presided over by Miss Tallulah Bankhead, with Meredith Wilson directing The Big Show Orchestra and Chorus. Then hear Phil Harris and Alice Faye for 30 minutes of mirth and melody. There's a laugh in every line when it's time for the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. Later, there's Theater Guild on the Air, and here to tell you about today's program is one of its stars, Miss Dorothy McGuire.
Tonight, Theater Guild on the Air brings you Henry Bernstein's story, The Thief. It is the story of the eternal struggle between what is true and what man wants to believe is true. It is the story of a young man's belief that his beloved is nothing less than the perfection he imagines her to be. Hear The Thief, presented by Theater Guild on the Air, tonight on NBC.
And now back to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
And now, here are the results of the case you have just heard.
At his trial on July 17, 1937, Al Holden pleaded guilty to murder and chattel theft. His sister, Ruth Crawley, received a 2-year prison term for obstructing justice, and Holden was sentenced to life imprisonment at Huntsville Penitentiary.
Here, once again, is the star of our show, Joel McRae.
Howdy, folks. Ever since that broadcast last year, when I read a poem entitled Not Guilty, we've had requests from judges, lawyers, police officers, and even a jailer in northern Alaska to repeat it. So, here it is. Not Guilty. I guess I've seen 1,000 men go in this jail and out, from tramps with month-old whiskers to rich men with a gout. Not one of them was guilty of the crimes the law accused. Seems they were all just victims of some officer's abuse. From the time the keys are rattled until they're locked up in the cell, their voices, though they differ from a whisper to a yell, the song is always just the same that everyone will sing. I don't see why they put me here. I haven't done a thing. Makes no difference what they've done or how mean the crime has been. When they're locked behind those prison bars, they're always free from sin. Though the evidence be solid and their voice with guilt may ring, they'll stand right up and tell you, I haven't done a thing. So long, folks. See you next week.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Included Tony Barrett, Whitfield Connor, Jeanette Nolan, Herb Ellis, and Betty Lou Gerson. Technical advisor was Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers. This story was transcribed and adapted by Charles E. Israel, and the program is produced and directed by Stacy Keats. Hal Gibney speaking.
Next, The Big Show brings you 90 minutes of drama, comedy, and music on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with Broadway Is My Beat and the Adventures of Nero Wolfe. And between now and then, you can find more from Tales of the Texas Rangers, Johnny Dollar, Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at the website relicradio.com. Find a Shoutcast stream there, and you can donate through the website. I'd like to help out this and all the Relic Radio shows. Got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts. If you're able to help out, it's greatly appreciated. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.